Live? Yes. So let me just, first of all, thank you to the panel members. And then I want to start at the beginning of the last discussion. Lars Lunk began us with the question of delegation. I think here we're thinking about collaboration, perhaps, questions of collaboration, but also questions about when is the work contained or uncontained, essentially the very process of defining what might constitute the work, and this idea of also the artist's process of definition and claiming and defining. So I think maybe this would be a thread that we could think about initially, would be this work of definition that happens around the work, but might actually be the work. And then other parts of that thread are different kinds of contexts. Obviously, move into a museum, display on a pedestal is one kind of context, economics are another kind of context. Olaf, you were talking before we started the panel a little bit about surrounding economics. So maybe we can think about those questions of what happens around the work, but not might nonetheless be central to the work. And I don't know if Olaf, if you would like to start us with the idea of the economics around that you were talking with me about a little bit before we started.
Yeah, I maybe want to come back to the aspect of the religious aspect, what I was highlighting, which has to do with the framework.
Uh-huh.
When we talk about the certificates and all these things, it's a deep sense of believing that all these things make sense. And without this framework of believing in this sense, the whole thing is bullshit.
Uh-huh.
So this is something what you have to see. It is like the social bind, what is created by being part of a system.
Mm-hmm.
So we should not talk about this kind of art system as it is something what we put in question. We are in it and it is a given. It's like a given for somebody in the 16th century that this religious world is a given thing. So we can see it also from the outside and then the whole turns shift. But this makes only... It put only some questions in economical terms, because if I buy it for 100 euros on eBay, or if I have the certificate, what does it make a difference for the object? It makes a huge difference for the owner, but not to cash it later. That is a side effect. It is a deep relation between the person and the object which is created. And where is this ability to create this relation coming from? You know, the fetishization or the commodification. What is that? I mean, and this is what I'm very interested in. And that is also where I think when you talk about the economical aspects, then behind this economy, there is another economy on work. And this is the economy of desire, mm-hmm. that you really want to be in that. And this is an economy what you not have really access to. But it is an economy which is today in use to create fields of economy that economy is going still running, that you can have an economy still, you know, I mean. As Frederick Jameson once put it, we are in the state of where the unconscious is the resource of the material what we work today with is the unconscious. But how can be the unconscious the material? But it is, in fact. And that is what I'm very interested in as an artist, because I work in this field. And also when you showed the piece with this, in German there's a nice term, Gefälligkeitssignatur. It's coming from literature, you know, when you sign a book. And this is something, how you deal with that. I mean, and I have a good friend who is working in an auction house, he's running an auction house, and he says they guess that 60% of the signatures they have in the auction are fake, of contemporary arts. But nobody talks about it. And there are a lot of hidden, really, have people who deliver all the time these things in, and they know it's a huge black market in this case as well. So, and that is, I find super interesting aspects as well. But it's maybe not that much interesting in a way of talking about the references in an academic term.
Okay. Well, when I showed these two examples, on the one hand, Silfoy, and the other, Maria Eichhorn, I was also interested in the even the objects were in a way similar, and you can compare them, so academically perfect. Or there's a difference in how the certificates are distributed. If you remember, there was this red word copy put on the document. This was just a scan. This was sent to me by the gallery. And it is, I was not allowed to reproduce it in a book. And on the other hand, you have Maria Eichhorn, whose gallery and herself, she has no problem in spreading this and reproducing the certificate. And so now, I think this is a difference you can probably make between artists who are more interested in collaboration and sharing and artists who are probably more interested in this religious aspect that, Olaf, you were talking about. I mean, this is probably, this could be one distinction you can make.
You were thinking about a Hamilton that maybe is not a Hamilton, a work that might not be a work, or that might be somebody else's work.
Well, I mean, it was a very, very interesting. Is this working? Yeah, a very interesting kind of twist that was, you know, being made by both of them, in fact. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that Duchamp would have been thrilled if he would have known that, you know, all of a sudden his Large Glass was, you know, this kind of launched this discussion. Okay, is this a Hamilton or is it Duchamp? But what I'm really kind of, and it's kind of difficult to link myself into this certificate, like in contemporary art practice, but I think I was really interested, or I am very interested in this process of how you internalize like artistic processes. And I think what really triggered me was this the phenomena of language. And I mean, certificates are it's through language. It's words. It's not, you know, it's not material. So, and on the other hand, and this was a very, very fine, you know, thing that Hamilton did through translating. By the way, when I saw that, you know, at first Duchamp was saying it was un tout fait, and through like the transcultural translation, he found the term ready-made. So I thought, well, there's so many things that through language and through the translation into from one language into the other, all of a sudden there's a different meaning and a certain like appropriation of things. And then the other thing what really interested me was that the appropriation through technique, through hand-on, I mean, to really like go into the material and kind of internalize like an artwork through making. I mean, like literally, like I talked about this with Hamilton, and he was like so thrilled by redoing, literally redoing these things. So this is what I was very much interested in, like language and technique.
So, do any of you have questions for other members of the panel before I open this up to the larger audience? Or should I just let the audience? Or
I do have another thing that kind of links this panel to the one before,
yes.
That is the phenomena of delegating. So I think that might be a question that you might be interested in. I mean, how is this delegation thing it's a circuit. So how does that, what rhythm has that in the
I mean, for me, the delegation is a very simple part of production. I mean, I see it as a method. I just use it I have no problem of delegating. Or I don't think of authorship in this case. I mean, it's really something I want to make a thing possible. And that is very more interesting for me than the authorship, which is the result at the end. I want to see these things, or I want to see what happens when I initiate something. I find it more interesting to throw a stone into the water and see what does the stone in the water, or to remember that there was a stone ever thrown into the water and you can't see it anymore. But the water is different. So does this has an effect? I'm interested really in these kind of possibilities of navigating in a field which seems extremely restricted and very clearly lined up and reflected. And what you said about the box with all the notations to the class, it's an amazing thing when you read the whole literature about it, how they try to make sense of it. And the only sense what it makes it is a documentation of a person. it is Marcel Duchamp's writing. That is the sense of it. But it is a nice thing is everything else who tries to translate it in something else wants to consume it. And I find it so interesting thing that there is a way, a slight chance to produce something what is, you cannot consume. You know, that you can, for a slight moment, stop this consumption process. And it is linked to something which is unique, what in the old terms is all the time called the inconsumerable, the individual, that the person who you are. That, I mean, that is only something what you can be. I mean, that is the question what we deal today with. Is this really that case or is it not the case? Is this now given up? And that I found extremely interesting with Duchamp, that he had these moments where he produces things where the consumption stops. I mean, you can make sense of it, of course, but you have so many opportunities to make exactly the opposite sense of it at the same time, you know? And that is something what I found fascinating, that he also didn't make comments so much, or when he made comments, when you read all the comments about ready-made, they are so self-contradictionary. I mean, they are like crazy. And it is interesting to see that narrations are not adapting to that what you call life, and that life and narration are in a kind of contradictory constellation, hopefully. And that is something what I'm very interested in. Maybe it's a very romantic aspect.
Well, let's open this up to any questions. Yes, there is a question.
Yeah. I just wanted to point that some fields are interesting for the auditor, but not very clear. For example, Olaf Nicolai described that there could be more signs and objects of the to which signs are attributed. Similarly, we can imagine that there are more objects that we don't perceive than objects that we perceive because of time limitations and space limitations, because we need time to go through space. But actually, in our daily life, we are often in a situation in which Duchamp was, where we are, most of objects are just technical objects or for use, while nothing attracts us to them and nothing makes us flee from them. So we are not having a dynamic, special dynamic of attraction or repulsions. So it's anesthetic, which is the fun, what Duchamp in some of his declaration made fun of. So let's make the anesthetic objects, let's become aware of anesthetic objects and sign them. But what I mean is that one of his ideas might be to be able to recognize ourselves in our state of non-movement of attraction or repulsion, to recognize, to let's say, to appropriate the infinity of space that is the substrate of movement from attraction and repulsion and stuff like this. The second was that I don't understand what I just checked mutt, the word M-U-T-T, and it means dog, mongrel, bastard, or stupid man. So I was like, why don't I hear that mutt means dog? And you know, dogs mark their territory, special territory, ownership of territory through urine. And so the tree has nothing, is anesthetic to the dog. The interest is to when it becomes his tree that marks his special territory. And it's like I thought about the mannequin piece. You know, there's no fountain if you just have the receptacle. You need the small guy. So, for example, the fountain takes his title only in the relationship between the emitter of urine and the receptor of urine. So the funny thing is that he describes in his fountain the situation of the artwork as an interaction between an emitter and a receptor, an emitter of projection. Each one projects something, his own story on an object, and each one has seen another artwork, you know. So but the most impressive idea would be to say, infinite space and infinite amounts of objects are anesthetic to us as individual, but we can still say we know they are there. It's also ours.
Would you like to jump in and respond?
About the mud thing, I can't say so much. This is better to Thomas Gerst, because he was very into this kind of the title of the, but the idea of the perception, that is exactly what I was highlighting when I was talking about the Tears of St. Lawrence. When is something appearing in the field of perception? When do you not pay attention to something? I think you're talking about paying attention. I really mean perception. Yeah.
When we become aware of something that is absolutely not repulsive and absolutely mm-hmm. not attractive to us, anesthetic, then something strange happens. As is, if we became aware of space, scientifically there is space here, mm-hmm. but I just use it, you know. But if we become aware of something fully anesthetic mm-hmm. and that is also material, then we are confronted to the dynamic or the joke that Duchamp made. He was like,
yeah, this
oh,
is
it's,
exactly
it's
the
so
point.
Difficult.
What,
yeah.
The threshold when you become aware.
Yeah.
And, what
and,
is behind
and
that?
And how can you become aware of what is not conditioned by culture? Maybe I'm attracted to
yeah.
this type of stuff and repulsed by this stuff,
this
but
is,
it's a ready-made stuff from my culture.
This is the
and,
question
and
what
I
have.
How can I become, you know?
This is the question what I have. How can you be aware of something what is not given in your way of perception? How can you see something?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and how? And this is becomes exploration somehow. Or
yeah, of course.
Pioneer.
We
perception.
Can both look in white snow and we will see a lot very different. But yeah. when you protocol it, you found out that in each time people see very similar things. You know, you not have to see a movie to dream like movies.
What?
Yeah, because all the people around you who have seen movies act like movies, so it is there. Perception is not something what only works in the field of the conscious.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I mean.
I'm missing something, something anesthetic in my mind. The other thing that was strange to me is that the situation of the tree hiding the forest. When we say, oh, this piece of furniture was fully ready-made when I could order it, but now that I have multiple choices for this car or this piece of furniture, it's not a ready-made anymore. But isn't it just the tree is hiding the forest? Because each option is already made. So, I mean, it's not because there is a sprawling, bubbling, ready-made world that there's no ready-made anymore. But, yeah, this is another thing, yeah. But you mean we act, we are conditioned by movies, for example, or by culture, and it will make us project certain things within certain circumstances?
No, I don't think that you project. It would be to a subject object when you think about projection.
Yeah,
it is
yeah.
you. You are the medium already.
You
it's
mean
in you.
The object doesn't
there
exist.
There is no outside, it is in
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
But it's a very long discussion now how to think about it, you know.
Yeah, and also there is this
maybe
one point that you described, but I don't know if I bubbled about it, is that we might have a neutral point in ourselves, that is pre-movement of desire or repulsion. You know, I mean, we have to go into the gear of attraction or repulsion, but before we go into the gears, because I don't know, then we might be in a state where we can have a continuum between the special self, sub-movement, and the special, and as a subject, and the object that is also a sub-movement, you know, sub-magnetic. And so then only the object is space and the subject is space, or the perceptor, you know.
I guess, but I think it's a long discussion because you turn into the believing.
So I've just gotten the warning that we have 5 minutes, so I think I will open it up if anyone else would like to jump into the, yes.
I have a question about certificates. I guess it's mostly addressed to Tobias, but I guess not necessarily. So I was wondering, what are your thoughts about the blockchain technology and how could that work in certificates? So because we do face the situation where a certificate is quite often used as some sort of an ersatz of an artwork, that mostly with some sort of performative works where artists were very particular about not wanting the certificate to be the object displayed. Nevertheless, that happens so. And there's also all that fetish value that, well, sometimes, as you pointed, intentionally, but sometimes unintentionally, is attributed to the document. And then there's, of course, the question of the fraud, but also the conceptual level of what the certificate is. And if we could imagine switching to some sort of a blockchain technology with that, I mean, then, well, necessarily the safety of such a certificate would increase, but also the whole conceptual background of that would change. You could, for instance, have all the, I don't know, instructions, but you could also imagine a certificate that expires or certificates that expires if a person in the possession of an artwork does something that has been, well, written into contract, could not be done. So I was wondering, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, thank you very much. I mean, this is, so just listening to your question, I think the audience already got an idea of the diverse possibilities there are when you use certificates. And I think this, the two examples that I showed today are just a very special area within that field. And you mentioned performance work. I mentioned in my response Tino Segal, who's famous for his oral certification. And I don't know anything about the blockchain industry. Probably you could comment on this a little bit so that I got an idea what this means.
Well, I guess we have here people that know about that way better, and I guess Simon could explain us much better how how the blockchain exactly works. But that maybe would be too long for 5 minutes. Yeah. It comes down. It basically, the safety of it lays in the fact of endless reproduction of the certificate, so you can't falsify it because you will never be able to falsify everything.
Okay. But this is the link between IT technology and artistic practice, if I got an idea of it. Is that correct?
Well, I was more thinking about, you also mentioned the question, in the panel was also the question of the ownership mentioned. So I guess that a lot of technicalities that are related to that conceptual possession of an artwork could be solved with this technology, or this technology could potentially give a possibilities that would, for instance, make an artwork expiring at a certain time. You could theoretically also have a clausule in the contract that would make the certificate expiring if something changes, whatever.
I mean, what I showed today were very traditional forms of certifications or authentications of artworks. And as you mentioned, there have been in the conceptual art, this field of exploring certification or authentication in a way started. And even then there were different ways of authenticating a work. For example, Daniel Beren, he had this avertissement, this was a warning, this has to be signed by the person who bought the object and not a certificate that he issued, for example. Yeah. But as far as the newer technology or the latest technology is concerned, I'm really curious about these things, but I was more concentrating on the, let's say, the beginning of the post-conceptual art, which is already 20 years ago, yeah.
I mean, it's interesting to think the degree. Okay.
Just one sentence about the last one. I found this blockchain question, very interesting. Thank you. Who was it? Yeah, thanks. And I just wanted to relate back to another question, which was discussed at the same time certificates came out for conceptual art. That was how to deal with video art and digital art. Because there you could get a copy which would look the same as the original in a way. And this is more the track I think you should look for if you're interested in this problem, how this was solved in a long, complicated negotiation process where at first artists working with video and with digital data were reluctant to give a copy to anybody out of fear that it would be circulating without their permission. And now they put it all on YouTube because it is getting clearer that it's the same as with the postcard stamped by Seal Floyer. You need the certificate to own it. And they want people to see it on YouTube and then to buy it. You know, so you can see it anytime on YouTube and you still don't own it. And this kind of double complexity which has been developing in this field might be similar to the blockchain question in a way, only that the blockchain now is a certificate which is entering the digital domain and it's no longer on paper. You know, so you have it wholly embedded in a digital domain. But I think nobody does it until now. So are you an artist yourself? So go for it.
I mean, it is interesting to think about whether the how central or peripheral a certificate is to a work. I mean, whether it's, you know, in conceptual terms, something that is extremely central, or whether it's a marketing device. And so therefore, in a sense, more about the traditional notion of authentication as opposed to a set of instructions. But certainly, you know, there are issues that the Prusansky-Sigalov contract that got a lot of press in the early 70s, and only Hans Hacke has ever used it in a consistent way. There is a problem of how one keeps a set of instructions attached to the work. And I know that there have been some discussions of blockchain in relation to authors' resale royalty enforcement. But I think that in a sense, the kind of question you were raising was a question of the degree to which the certificate is something that the artist is playing with. And then essentially, you know, certificate as work in the sense that the artist is investing a kind of playful creativity into the certificate as well as, and that is in a sense not just certifying the work, but in a sense in that partly about the making of the work. Are we at time? So we're done? Okay. I think we have rather unceremoniously finished.